All right. And not a regular episode here with Javi Mason, and which we have Javi Mason's book. Like I don't know if you know, but we still try to push your book on the program that we got on Amazon.com.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, and you're there. And then what kicked this off, right? We're just and remember, folks, this is not like a regular news and comment episode. It's just free thought conversation. Mm-hmm. And Phoenix Kaliter strongly disagrees. Right?
What? That's a little excessive.
Yeah, because I think we were on your program, and yeah. And you brought us on, and then you had said that we remind you of the Reed, and then I went back and I listened to the Reed, and I was like, I can kind of see it, and Phoenix was like, no, and then I was like, well, probably, maybe not. Yeah, like, what do you think? What is similar with us and them?
The fact that y'all are very honest and very brutal about your topics and what's going on in the world, that's what it was. It wasn't to the point where y'all are like spilling tea and like talk about pop culture as much as they do. But what I really like about the Reed, as much as I like about y'all, is the fact that you have these topics and you not only make comments on them, but you make them very comedic. And so that was what, that's what I thought. You know what I mean? And, like, the two of y'all have great chemistry, just like the host of the Reed. You know, they bounce off one another as if, like, they just mesh. It's as if they know what the other is thinking. I'm assuming it's because they're around each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was thinking about when it comes to the Reed. And especially, y'all have no fucking filter whatsoever. Like, y'all really don't.
That might be true.
And the folks on the Reed don't have that filter either. They'll be the first ones to say some stuff that'll basically snatch somebody's wig off, basically. And you're like, what? I would never say that in public, but that's what they do. And they're very honest about it. They're very honest about their personality. They're very honest about what they say. And they do a lot of commentary on issues that affect people of color, especially black folks. You know, granted, y'all don't give advice to people and, you know, judge the people who write in and ask for advice, because that's just not the way y'all do it. But yeah, that's what, when I watched or listened to the Reed, I immediately thought of you two because of all those qualities that they have.
See, Phoenix Kaliter?
What?
That's the nuance.
Yes. Funny.
Yeah, I was wondering too, like, I would love to see y'all on stage and doing something live, because that's what they do too. You know, in fact, that's what a lot of podcast hosts have been doing. They would like do a live production on the stage and do tours and things of that nature, so I see the two of you doing that as well. And it would be really dope if y'all really did, because I would come all the way to, you know, from Rochester to Chicago, back to the Midwest to see y'all.
Aw, thank you.
For real.
I think that would be hard for us because of what we cover. Like, if we did, like, if we were, like, binge-watched what, like, Love and Hip Hop and really commented on it,
yeah,
then we could hit the popular culture. But, like, people don't care about what we talk about.
there is truth to that. Because it's not, like, our topics are very serious. Like, even though we try to be funny and entertaining, our topics are usually pretty serious. It's like, we don't want to hear about police brutality. We want to take a break from hearing about police brutality and have fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would be, maybe. I don't know, maybe. Of course, then I don't know if I can handle being in a room with people talking about the stuff we talk about.
On stage?
Yeah.
That's what you did in California?
Well, yeah, but I wasn't podcasting. I was lecturing.
What do you do on the podcast?
tangenting.
So improvisational lectures.
What? No.
No, that's a good no. I like that no.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might be a little bit weird to cover some of the stories like while looking at people. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Especially since y'all talk about Florida so much.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if we have like a light day, you know. Or we, I don't know, maybe we'll do like a Lucifer podcast or something.
Yeah, like our
Lucifer podcast.
Yeah. Our last episode was rapists make good fertilizer.
Yeah, that's
like,
oh, what?
Yeah, it's about killing rapists. But the thing is, right, like, because, like, our conclusion that we arrived at, that, like, together, right? I was already there. I don't know if you were there. But, like, was that we gotta kill a lot of people. Like, if you want justice, you got to kill for it. Like, that's the only way you're going to get there. Like, because the people who are unjust, they're not going to improve ever.
Right,
you
right.
have to kill
yeah,
them.
That's the, and, yeah, that's the thing. Is they won't improve unless we make them. So yeah, we end up with show titles like Rapists Make Good Fertilizer.
Right.
Yeah.
And my thing is though, like, I'm not, with everything that's going on, like, I'm not gonna lose any sleep because there's like so many stories coming out now. Especially, you know, with the sexual assault stories. Like the one about Azizi Ansari or I think his name is uh-huh. and I like, how do y'all feel about that? Like, anyway, I would really like to talk about that for a second, because this young lady named Grace came forward and said that she went out on a date with him. They went back to his place, and he just started to basically harass her for sex, and things escalated from there. And a lot of folks are saying that, you know, that's not sexual harassment, but that is, like, non-consensual sex. So I mean, he's always been problematic anyway, but I never thought that he would take it there. So it's like, what do you, how do y'all feel about that story as far as, you know, his conduct towards her and people's reaction to it?
I'll jump it off, right? Because, first, I hear, like, I've got my misandry, right? My misandry is in my back pocket. It's always there. But then, so I see the story, and it's, like, almost all the stories I cover. But then, I'm like, wait, there's a white woman? And it's a white woman with, he ain't black, but he dark. And, and I'm like, I don't like either of them. Like, both of them can fuck off, right? Because, like, white, remember, the woman that lied on Emmett Till didn't tell the truth about it until, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And, like, so there's my disbelief of white women that's crashing into my misandry. That's where it is with me still. I have no conclusion yet. Like, white women can fuck off and men can fuck off.
Yes, basically. I am bothered by a couple points of the story. I think anybody who's saying it wasn't sexual harassment is just, like, fucking wild, really. Like, obviously, it was definitely, what was being described is definitely sexual harassment. I think what bothers me the most about the piece, the original piece, is the way it was written. It was written, I think, intentionally for shock value and not to foster a conversation or have a discussion, because I think that what she's describing is something that a lot of women and femmes have been through, where you know it's not like a violent, brutal attack, but at the same time it's really uncomfortable and this person just won't leave you alone, and I would like to have a conversation about that. But it seems like everybody's caught up in, you know, either you know, just straight up calling it rape as if it were a black and white issue without discussing the nuance, or they're just standing for Aziz because, you know, that's their favorite whoever, you know, comedian or actor or whatever, and, you know, not talking about it. But I feel like we're, the time to have the conversation is slipping away, and we're missing a really good opportunity to talk about how consent is flexible and how boundaries move and shift as time goes on, about how, you know, to navigate a world where, because this is something men do frequently, is, you know, the beginning of no is the start of the negotiation, you know, when women say that.
And I really wish that that's what we were talking about, but we're not.
Right.
We're not. Right. And it's so like...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, so yeah, but yeah, so like that's just really, really frustrating to me. And something I think that, and like, I don't know, because I haven't heard from this individual herself, you know, so like, I don't know how much that piece accurately depicted her feelings or emotions, but I think that something that was noted was that she never said she was uncomfortable or she never said she was scared. So people were like, but then why didn't you just leave? Because, you know, like you weren't scared or whatever, but they're not discussing the cultural nuance of how hard it can be to tell men no or what to do when your no is being invalidated. And the dudes are still trying to behave that way, you know? And I think that it's probably one of the most difficult conversations to have about rape culture because a lot of men behave this way. There's a lot of men who'll be like, well, you know, it's like kind of like that Louis C.K. shit to a certain degree where he was like, well, I asked if I could take out my penis first. And it's like, yeah, but the power dynamics and the timing and the situation, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't appropriate. It was really hard to say no. And I think that that's one of the reasons that we don't want to have this particular conversation about this particular facet of rape culture is because a lot of men behave this. So they'll say they're good men. I've never raped anybody. I've always gotten a yes. She's always consented. But then they don't mention how maybe they spent 2 hours badgering their partner or a person for sex. Or how the person said no first and they were like, well, let me just convince you. Let's just have another drink. Let's just talk a little bit more until they finally got their yes. And I don't think that people want to have that conversation, honestly.
I think Louis C.K., there's a significant difference that he is a over 6 foot big motherfucker. And he and in one of the stories about him, he blocked the hotel door.
Oh, okay. Like that, I was thinking so about that, the one, it was like after a show, and he was like, can I take out my penis and masturbate? And they were like, wait, I guess, what? Like, no one knew what was going on, and then he just kind of did, and it was like, it was weird. The timing was weird, the situation was weird, and I think that that's part of that, the difference between, like, I guess I will tolerate this versus enthusiastic consent.
Yeah, and you know what, and the logical thing to do is kill Louis C.K. Like, he needs to be, euthanized for the good of the species. Now, and part of that, like, and I don't like doing this, folks. No, I don't like I'd prefer to have the verbatim quote in front of me and play the clip for you, but I would have to go through all of Louis C.K.'s comedy specials to find this bit, because what was a regular thing he did? Masturbate in front of women that don't want to see him do it, right? And he has a bit where he talks about being like 12 or 13 years old and showing his penis to a girl that had a mental disability.
What?
Yeah. And he said, hey, I just wanted somebody to look at it. And I'm like, there's a connection.
See, and that's that thing too that keeps coming out now is a bunch of these people have it. That was the same fucking thing with Bill Cosby, right? Hey. You put something in her drink and then it, hello America.
Yeah, he said that on Larry King. He said that.
Like,
right, that's what I was going to say. On Larry King, he straight up flat out said that he basically described how he did this stuff. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how is that now coming out? And that's what really bothers me. Like, all this stuff that all these comedians, all these celebrities have done doesn't really come out until the accusation comes out. Like, don't, like, are you serious? Like, why didn't anybody, and I'm not, like, even on behalf of the victim, why didn't anybody say anything? You already, like, this is literally documented on television. And I just did not understand the whole thing with Bill Cosby. And that's the first time I ever seen anything documented like that, and me thinking, how is this man not being held accountable for his shit? But I didn't understand that.
It's the rape culture, Charlie Brown. Fucking
right.
I can go back to a 1991 NWA album, and MC Ren literally describes to his fans how they should commit a rape, orally. Okay. Remind me, I have to put a trigger. I need to put a trigger. I gotta put a trigger warning at the beginning of this episode. And MC Ren, I don't like doing this, but you can fact check me and it'll be true. MC Ren on the Niggas for Life NWA album in 1991, he has a verse where he literally describes how you should commit a rape. And it's about oral rape. Mm-hmm. And he's like, if she says no, hit her in the eye. And then when she falls to the ground, now she's at the level for an oral sex act, and you just force her to do it. Like, damn. That's normal in the culture. Like, and that didn't just come from MC Ren. MC Ren got that from somebody. And whoever, that person got it, they got it from somebody running back however many gazillions of years.
Right.
Listen, KRS-One put out a song back in the day about sleeping with a 13-year-old girl and liking it. So it's like, that type of, it's like, you're right. Like, it's very, in the hip-hop culture, rape culture is very much prevalent, and it's very much, it's as if people are desensitized to it. And it makes me wonder, is it because of generational trauma that is going on? Is it because of historical trauma? And lately we have a part in this where the black body, at least the female black body, it's just seen as something to use and sexualize. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, where did that, like, that had to have come from slave culture. That had to have come from that part of history where, in order for women to even survive in that culture, they had to subject themselves to being raped. And what? and because black men wanted that power, what makes me think that they did not look at, you know, a slave master and say, like, over time, you know, and basically internalize a lot of that toxicity and say, like, look, I want that same power as, you know, the white man. I'm going to do this to these women.
Well, not like what you're talking about there, right? Like, you said women have to subject themselves, right? So I'm going to take that and look at this right here, right? Christopher Columbus's diary is publicly available for anyone to examine it. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how a Taino woman, he beat her until she was willing to have sex with him, which that's fucking rape. She didn't want to have sex with him.
Right.
And then he wrote in his own diary that she was like my whore. So I think particularly in this Eurasian, right, European Asia connected Eurasian culture, which in that culture is rape culture that they've pushed across the planet, like everybody else is subject to that and influenced by that, which is why in an episode way back in like 2014 I said white people are AIDS, and I have the argument to back that up, to back up that analogy. And like now, like, black men are like that, and in that microcosm, macrocosm of culture feeds into those microcosms, well, Phoenix.
I think that, like, one of the big things, too, is that, like, capitalism as a concept is kind of new, like, termed, you know, capital and capitalism, but the underlying social hierarchy is not new, and people, you know, particularly Europeans, have had a fucking obsession with commodifying people into different types of work forces or labor forces, and there's literally nothing else for black women to do. Because they generally don't want to marry black women, because that will taint your pure European bloodline. You can't necessarily have them doing necessarily the same labor that men are doing. You can't treat them like white people. So I think that they're, you know, that feeds into a lot of the misogynoir where sexism and racism meet, because of the way that's the way black women were commodified. And we're still under this, like, capitalist kind of social hierarchy bullshit where that is a black woman's primary job, is to be a sexual object, because that is her first and foremost work, whether that be for slave breeding to, you know, raise up the next generation, whether that be just to be an asshole and be a sadist because you want to rape someone, you know, whether that be, you know, someone that you want to stare at, so you, you know, put them in your workplace just so you can stare at them and sexually harass them. Like, a black woman being a sexual object is, in my opinion, very, very much tied to European standards of control, particularly financial control in their financial systems. And everybody has internalized a lot of this shit. And I think that when it comes to black men in general, I think that a lot of black men behave very similar to white women. White women will let racism slide because as long as white men are focused on us and not them, they're a little bit safer. And they'll take that. And with black men, when it comes to especially sexual violence, white men are focused on us over black men. And that makes black men a little bit safer in that little microcosm. And they'll take that. Like, everyone has gotten to a point where it's so bad, you're willing to let the person directly underneath you on the social ladder stay there if it makes you 1 hour safer, 1 hour without white interference, you know? And it's gotten to that point where, you know, people just take that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and like, and that shit ain't just white men. All men objectify black women like that. Like, look at the love life of an Asian guy. Like, he's right, like, he's younger than us. And his big woke trophy is the black woman he's with.
Yep.
But think about how young he is.
Yeah.
Like, when he was a teenager, he was watching Ghetto Gaggers on porno.
Ew.
He was watching rap videos with black women dancing. Mm-hmm. Like, fucking, like, that's not a serious relationship for him. That's his fucking fetish. That's his nigger bitch fetish. I used the B word, excuse me.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, the thing is because that's the only thing black women have been allowed to be. And that's the only safe place, too. So if you do want to openly commodify a woman or objectify a woman or degrade a woman, it's always safe to do it to a black woman. Like, you might be able to do it to a white woman if you have a certain amount of status and class. You know, you might be able to do it to a woman of color, depending, you know, where you are in the social hierarchy. But it's always safe, no matter what race you are, no matter what income level you are, it is always safe to do that to a black woman.
Yeah, and at my job, right? Like, my job is predominantly Mexican folks working there. And all right, let's go ahead and pull out the male gaze for a second. There are a lot of women there that have what one might refer to as a big ass, mm-hmm. right? And, but a couple of weeks ago, I told you about this, I was training a black woman there, mm-hmm. and, but she got another job for higher paying, so she left in 2 weeks. But I was training her, and there's one, cis hetero male, that works there, his name's Manuel, a Mexican man, mm-hmm. and every once in a while, he just asked me, "What happened to the girl with the big ass, William?" And the thing is, there's a lot of Mexican women there that have big asses, if you will. And sometimes white women that pass do it big asses, if you will. But he only focuses on the black one with the big ass, because that's the one that's the most of a non-autonomous object to him.
Well, Jesus fucking Christ, didn't even learn her name.
Nope. And like, I say her name every time. I always say, "Oh, her name was boop," not saying it on the show, fuck you. And and I always say her name to him, and I always say, "Yeah, she's really smart and a very good worker." And he just goes back to "big ass, William."
Ugh. That's gross.
Yep.
That's really fucking gross.
It is, to the core.
Ugh.
Yeah, that is really fucked up. That is fucked up on many, many levels.
Yeah, and that's why, in our factory, we work in rooms, and when I was training her, I would take her out of the room as little often as possible so that those men wouldn't fuck. Like, literally, I remember one time, a fucking forklift driver was driving at full speed and stopped looking where he was going to stare at her while I was, you know, training her and walking her to a specific station to do a task.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're driving a forklift. You could kill somebody, including yourself, but stop looking at what he was doing so he could stare at her big ass.
Wow. So he's basically going to break his own neck just to look at this woman's ass?
Yeah,
this is not even...
That's messed up.
And see, this is why, and unfortunately, this is why now there's this culture of young women who are basically injecting all kinds of shit into their body because now this is the only way they can get attention. Now this is the only way they can feel as a whole human being, or this is the only way they can feel like an actual authentic black woman, is to now have these curves, like these, you know, Beyonce type curves. And most women don't even look like that, for one. Like, I don't know a lot of us who do. At least I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just seemed like, you know, like this is not okay. And I feel like now it's now to the point where you know, like the ass is like the this focal thing that people want to have, white women included. Mm-hmm. And now they're using that, saying that, you know, black men are now using this and saying, like, now you have competition because the white woman has this ass and you need to do something to, you know, to be a competition or to compete with this woman. And I'm trying to, like, when did this happen to where, you know, the ass and, you know, that being, like, the only thing that people care about?
I think that's kind of always been a thing with black women in particular because, I mean, basically since white people found Africa, because a lot of the traditional type dances involved hips, involved, you know, like, you would say twerking, you know, but there have been dozens of variations of that across Africa and even in, you know, other non-white cultures. But this is also coming from a time when Europeans were very, very Catholic, completely clothed, like, from the neck to the toes, you know?
Yes!
And, like, very, very conservative. So the first thing they see is, like, ah, she doesn't have on a top and I can see her boobs and she's shaking her ass. And, you know, and I think that that's really, like, tragic in a way because a lot of these traditional things were done as, like, women's circles of women's spaces or things to, like, fertility rituals and things like that. But all they saw was, like, I see ass and now I'm aroused and I have a situation and I don't know how to handle it, so I'm going to be really abusive. It's kind of what happened. So I think with black women, the backside has always been a thing. I mean, that's how we had Sarah Bartman, you know, who, if folks don't know, she was an African woman who basically went on tour in Europe wearing...
Well, you can get all your facts from Jezebel on that one. Anybody...
Shut up. Shut your pie hole.
So Jezebel lied about that shit, you know, but our audience knows that shit, yo. But you know what? Like, that's why one of the most nonsensical things I ever heard, one of the most ridiculous things was, I think it was 2002, and the rapper Ludacris had a new album out. Mm-hmm. And on one of the lines in one of his records, he said, "I'm the new phenomenon like white women with ass." And it's like, no! Cis women, trans women, however you want... Is it like... human beings in general have always had protruding butt cheeks, some more so than others.
Right.
Like, it's not just from the mother continent of the planet, but, like, anywhere and everywhere, there's always been fucking protruding glutes, if you will. Like, but like you said, they were all fucking covered up.
Yeah, and they were covered up, and they were very sexually repressed and assumed anything was sexual. That was, you know, had a lot to do with how they treated Native women as far as hypersexual, because they're not wearing all their clothes and they have these risque dances. And that was the same opinion they had of, like, Pacific Islanders. That's the same way when they went to India, they're like, they're moving their stomachs when they dance, they're moving their hips, what is happening, you know? Then it, like, a lot of that shit. And they, because they only see women as sexual objects as opposed to people, they couldn't recognize the cultural value of various people's traditional dances. Like, if you're moving your hips, it has to be about sex, because that's the only time I see hips is during sex, so that must be what this is, because I'm white and therefore right all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also think that, like religion and European Christianity and not those ideologies play a huge part in that stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because my thing is, though, like, they're all, like, well, these white folks, anyway, they have been taught, you know, to cover up. They've been taught to repress. They've been taught to basically see themselves as the chosen people. And because they're the chosen people, they have to be respectable. And when they see another culture or a person in another culture being free and being not only free, but being basically being spiritually free as well as physically free, they can't handle that. And so now they have to abuse that. They have to find some way to, just like Phoenix said, they have to find some way to, like, have it compute in their minds, because this is completely different. Their God is completely different. The way they worship that God is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, from how they do it, you know, how they worship this white God that they pretty much made up to control other people and to control themselves and their own behaviors. So now I feel like it's not just an issue of, there's like an envy there. There's like a cultural envy and there's like a personal envy because these other folks are free and now they have to do everything they can to control that, whether they use religion or not. And like the controlling someone's sexuality and the sexuality of people of color is one of those ways to use religion to control them.
I think a lot of it is sadistic. It's sadism. Because these same people, like, you look at them, like, look at the news every single day. I guarantee if you wake up every single morning at the exact same time and you just Yahoo or Bing search or ask that nigga Jeeves, and you search and you look for Christian man, leader, pastor, whatever, busted having gay sex, you'll find more than one news stories every single day. It's just like how I search rapist cop stories and I get multiple news stories every single day. So it's it's more of like sadistic control. They want to see people uncomfortable, unhappy, and suffering more so than they're thinking any actual sense of morality. They have no morality.
That is their morality. Is that basically, if we're not them, we're sinners, and because we're sinners, we need to be punished all the time. So we have to electrocute gay people until they become hetero and good by default. You know, we have to beat our kids until they obey rules, which makes them good by default. You know, we have to be abusive to our wives because if they're disrespecting you, they're being sinful. It's anything that does not soothe a white male ego is a sin, and therefore you need to be punished for it. Having sex, sinful. You need to be punished if you're a woman.
Right.
You know, like, that's their, that is their, like, that is, yeah, it's sadism, absolutely, and that is their morality, is that if you aren't them, you need to be punished and hurt for not being them. But then, of course, they made it literally impossible to be them, right? Like, we can't all be white men, you know?
No!
Like, not just ideologically, but, like, physically, we can't all be, you know, some, like, 6 foot tall fucking Swedish man or whatever the fuck Jesus looks like these days. You know, we're not all blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryans, you know, and we can't be. And that's the thing, is they set up the rules in such a way that there are certain people who will always be excluded, and therefore it's acceptable to punish them because they are outside. Which I think is the thing about the Bible, is we need to stop looking at it as, like, a book, per se, and view it of more of what it actually is, which is a manual of tribalism. And how to create your tribe that oppresses and conquers other tribes. That is what the Bible is. It's not, like, people are like, oh, but it's a book about morality and things like that. It's not specifically about morality, good or bad, because this is something, if you read the Bible, you notice there's a different set of rules for how you interact with your tribe versus how you interact with everybody else.
Yeah,
right. Like, it's wrong to steal with people from people within your tribe, but you can go kill them motherfuckers over there and take their daughters.
Oh, if they're virgins.
If they're virgins,
take them and rape them. Yeah, don't use the word rape, though.
Don't use the word rape.
You say sexual misconduct.
Exactly. But, you know, I think that's the thing, is it's not specifically like a morality book. It's a rule book of how to create your own tribe and make your tribe so ideologically entrenched in a certain thing that they are okay with oppressing and dehumanizing other people. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I completely, like, agree with that. And a lot of people don't see that. Why do you think, like, slave owners, like, use that particular book? And there's, like, an actual book written by a man. I forgot the name of the author, but this is, like, a manual on how to use the Bible to control slaves. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, that type of stuff. My thing is, I consider myself a spiritual person. I'm very much a spiritual person. And I feel that the spirituality is used correctly, is used to empower people. That's not what most religion, at least organized religion, is used for. You know, it's used to not only brainwash people into thinking that they are less than, it's also used to control entire people to say, like, look, not only are you less than, you want to be like us because we because of the privileges that we have, because of all these, you know, these things that we have, you know, skilled, and like we have, you know, manifest destiny. You want to be like us because we are powerful. Mm-hmm. And as a result, now people of color are, you know, drinking that Kool-Aid to this day.
Yep.
Saying like, look, I want to be like you. I want what we have. Why do you think that we always have, instead of fighting for equity, people want equality? You know, mm-hmm. Why do you think that, you know, those black folks will throw each other under the bus, you know, to get what they want and need, you know, from the white man or from a corporation? It's because they have been taught, whether it be through religion or not, that in order to be powerful, you have to be white. And this is not okay. This is not okay, especially when it comes to, you know, when it comes to our personal power, when it comes to our spiritual power. We don't even have a culture, you know, like, of our own any longer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We don't even have, we just take bits and pieces of other people's cultures, you know, and try to make stuff from scratch. That's how it's been, you know. And what we take, they still try to take it. So yep. It's like, we can't even have any sort of power unless, you know, unless we are in fact white. And it's just, and like you said, it's just not possible. It's not possible at all. You know, so it's to the point where, like, I'm extremely frustrated. I'm extremely frustrated with this whole thing, because I don't want what they have. I don't want it. Like, I don't want what they have. I want the opportunity. I want equity. I want the same opportunities, you know, to get what I want and need, so I could, you know, do for myself and do for my family, do for, you know, my community. I couldn't care less about getting exactly what, sorry, my housemate is doing the fucking most. But he is, like, it doesn't make any sense. I hate living here. But anyway, but yeah, that's my take on it.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think that a big part of the problem is that because, you know, at this point we've been generations born under white supremacy, it's really difficult to imagine something outside of white supremacy at this point, you know? And it's like hard to imagine something without whiteness, you know? And I think that's our downfall. But I think another problem we have, too, is that we, like, a lot of people of color are, like, passive about this shit. Where they'll be like, well, I don't want to be, you know, like, racist like white people are. I just want to be at the top of the power structure. But they ignore how being at the top of the power structure still perpetuates the power structure. The people at the bottom still going to suffer, are still hurting, you know? And this is, like, one of my biggest beefs with a lot of, like, black Democrats or liberals or centrists. They're still very invested in capitalism, but they are very anti-white supremacy. And I was like, well, what's the point of getting rid of white supremacy if I'm still going to be poor?
Right.
And hungry. Exactly. Like, I'm not really winning here, you know? And because, like, you're still okay with a system that involves social hierarchy. You just want it to be a racially equitable social hierarchy where, you know, you have a chance to make it through. And, you know, you have a chance to, you know, be in a situation where you can be on top. But in order for you to be on top, people at the bottom still have to suffer. You know, you can be a billionaire CEO, but in order to do that, you're still going to have to underpay your workers. You know, you can be a famous celebrity who makes millions of dollars, but you're still going to, you know, engage in harmful types of, you know, materialism or consumerism that's going to hurt the environment and hurt people. And I think that that's something that we're just not talking about enough, really. And I think that it's like, you know, that needs to be part of the conversation, is it's not just white supremacy or racism. It's everything that came with whiteness. And that includes, you know, economic inequality. That includes, you know, how we view gender. That includes things like homophobia or shaming basic human sexuality, right? It's not just the racism that we need to talk about. We need to talk about everything that came with whiteness, because there's a lot of fucked up shit that came there. You know, it's fucking gender binary, fucking poverty, fucking, you know, like, the way that the environment is being treated so corporations can make a profit. That's what we really need to work on, you know? And I think that a lot of people miss that, because they're just so busy trying to get to the top so that they're not being oppressed anymore, that they forget everybody who's still left at the bottom.
And I also think, too, that, at least leftists anyway, I feel like we are always, constantly arguing about tactics. we're not even looking at the big picture anymore. We're paying too much attention to the details, you know, and who has, you know, the biggest book and who read Marx's the most. Mm-hmm. And we don't even see, you know, that conservatives are pretty much using our tactics against us. Why? Because, you know what I mean? And I feel that we're wasting a lot of time worrying about, instead of, you know, fighting, like, coming together and fighting white supremacy, we're too busy trying to, you know, conquer one another, if intellectually, or basically putting out fires, you know, among liberals because they're crying white tears and basically saying, I'm not racist. Mm-hmm. So that whole Me Too shit is really killing me. Like, or not Me Too, but, well, the way they use it.
Right. Because, yeah. You know, it got really, really white.
Yeah, that's what it's not that, but it's the way that's being used. Mm-hmm. It's also the Women's March.
Yep.
That whole thing that happened. That's what's getting me. That particular thing, I've been paying attention to it, you know, via Facebook or whatnot. So a lot of those folks, they missed the point, to the point where they're being exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have all this, white supremacy is the biggest enemy here, and the way that white folks are using that superiority is the biggest enemy here. But because the ego involvement is in the way, and there's a lot of ego, you know, involvement as far as, you know, tactics and how we utilize those tactics, that we're fighting one another, and we're not even looking at the big problem anymore.
Right.
We're fighting all these little things now. And that's really getting me. Because ultimately, that's going to get us killed. That is going to get us killed.
Yeah. And I think that part of the problem that the left has is that they're just not good at, like, being on point with messages. Like, Republicans are really, really good at bumper sticker rhetoric and dog whistles, you know? They can have an entire conversation that conveys multiple beliefs and multiple ideas with very, very few words, because they already know the talking points. And I think that the left needs to get better at that in general. And I think another thing too to consider is that a lot of positions on the right come from an authoritarian point of view. And these are a lot of people who were raised, like, that's why they love the military, that's why they love police. You know, that's, they love white Jesus. They're very authoritarian in nature. They're very willing to accept a hierarchy and just trust somebody who's makes more than you, or somebody who has a position above yours, because they must have earned it somehow. And so they're just more willing to trust. I think the left is not as willing to trust, which is good. You shouldn't just trust people. But I think that also makes it harder to try to kind of like round people up to have the conversations or do the work, right? They say like activism on the left is kind of like herding cats, you know?
Yeah.
But when it comes to the right, you just, you know, hi, I'm an authority. I have a deep voice. I'm a white man, and therefore you need to trust me. I'm rich. And they do. And I think that is a huge thing that's made it a lot easier for them to get to their base.
Right. Right. William, you're real quiet over there. What's going on?
Oh, I'm about to lean in toward, all right. So now, when we first came in contact with you, you had a blog, a podcast and whatnot, but now we call you Javier, right? Javier Mason. And, are you going to update, change the name of the blog and keep creating content, change the name of the pod? Are you going to keep creating content and just change the name or anything like that?
Actually, it's Louis Javier Mason, and Javi is my nickname.
Okay.
I'm actually, and that's the thing, though, like, I was actually thinking about that, as far as, like, Black Girl with Glasses. I want to keep it as it is, because I feel like changing that now, I can tell people, like, look, I'm transitioning, and I have no problem doing that whatsoever. But as far as, like, the content, I definitely want to celebrate Black women. I want to celebrate them, because we don't, like, especially when I was living as a woman, that they did not get any love at all, mm-hmm. especially dark-skinned women, dark-skinned fat women, you know, and alternative Black folks. So it's like, I want to give a platform to, like, that's my way of celebrating Black women and continuing to do so. I will change the name. I won't change the name of the blog. If anything, I want to one of these days invite people to, you know, to submit their work, you know, just so it's just not me, you know, doing this, and it's just me, like, giving a voice to women, to marginalized folks, especially those in the GLBTIQA community. So I would just need to sit down and actually, like, plan this out, because I want that to be part of this huge plan that I have. And as far as, you know, I definitely want to use Black Girl with Glasses to give a platform to trans people, Black trans folks as well, because I just started, just like, as William said, like, I started doing live videos talking about my transition. And the reason why, one of the reasons why I started doing that is to give Black trans people hope, because in our community, we don't have a lot of support. In our community, we don't have a lot of resources, you know, in our families, or, you know, in the community, you know, celebrating the lives of trans Black folks. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of us who are out here, you know, struggling with transitioning, or struggling with our gender identity, struggling with our sexual orientation, and we don't even know who to talk to. So I wanted to be that voice, you know, to say, like, look, we are out here. We're doing the most. We are alive. We do have support. We can be to support for one another. And this is how it is for me. You know, just so, because I know that I'm not the only one, of course, going through hormones. I'm not the only one who is, you know, going through what is called puberty 2.0 again. Like, a lot of people need to know, like, the ins and outs of being trans, especially if they are going to go through this whole process. And also, I wanted to do this to basically say, like, look, my old self isn't gone. My old self isn't dead. Like, I don't even say I have a dead name. I said, you know, that's my old self. That's my old name. Mm-hmm. And that's very important for me spiritually to pay homage to and honor my old self, because she protected me, Javi, from a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. She protected my body. You know, she used, you know, she just used a lot of herself spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally, to protect me from the bullshit that I went through as a kid, or went through as a 20-something-year-old person. So when it was time for me to come out, I put her to rest. She could rest now. I consider her my twin sister. She ain't going nowhere. You know, she actually balances me out, because Javi doesn't put up with a lot of stuff, but she gives people the benefit of the doubt. You know, Javi is somewhat, you know, me as a person, like, I'm becoming more confident in myself. And she keeps me humble. So it's like that sort of stuff that, you know, I want people to actually think about the spiritual element of, you know, the spiritual journey that comes with being trans as well, if they choose to do that. So someone told me I should start a YouTube channel, you know, and I may do that. And after the I know that you have my first copy, and I just wanted to let you know too that I made revisions to that to the first novel, so it's not as, you know, it's definitely not the same, you know. It's actually much quicker than the one that you have. And I'm more than willing to give you, like a free copy of that book if you so want it. But I'm also, after I do this particular trilogy, I'm going to be focusing on people of color and people within the GLBTIQA community, because I feel like we don't have a lot of representation. I feel like we don't have a platform, and we have so many rich stories, especially when it comes to science fiction and fantasy, urban fantasy in particular, because there's a thing piece out there about science fiction, like, basically belonging to us anyway. It stems from Africa. It stems from our story. And I feel that, you know what I mean? I feel that we have our own folklore, we have our own stories, we have our own experiences, especially on the spiritual level. Why is that not being showcased as much as it should?
Yeah,
so it's like, that's what I want to do, and I feel that in my heart, that's where I am going to go. Yeah, so I'm doing a lot. And also, I have another podcast called The Hood Psychic. And The Hood Psychic is basically me and my friend Malik talking about our experiences as psychics. And we're also using that as a platform to basically make it, to tell people that it's all right to have these abilities. Because that, too, is an issue within the Black community where, you know, it's probably predominantly Christian.
Right.
And a lot of our spiritual practices were, you know, have been lost once we became, slaves here. We were not allowed to practice anything outside of Christianity. So a lot of those customs and a lot of those rituals, that's a better word for rituals, were incorporated into Christianity, and we did that to hide a lot of our practices. You know, having an altar.
Yeah.
That's an African custom. That's an African ritual.
Well,
you know, laying of the hands, you know, speaking the spirit. That's our shit.
So you probably already know with me that there's I've got no spiritual anything going on with me. I just I'm not convinced that any of that is real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the book no free copy. I'll buy a copy, like, because bills exist. I got to invest in you so that you can spin that back around and invest in yourself. Take dollars from a black pocket and put them in another black pocket.
Yes.
So I'll pay for it. Is it on Amazon?
Yes.
I'll definitely rather pay for it. And the copy that I currently have, folks, is the one taken from the Sea of Stars. And
yes.
Is it the same name?
Yep, Octavia Davis. And it has Hobby Mason on the back of it.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
But yeah, like, those are the things that I'm doing as far as projects, and I'm not just trying to, like, to convince to go back to the other side, because I'm not trying to convince anybody, you know, to believe or anything like that. I'm just saying that I'm just giving people not just me, but my friend Malik. There's a lot of folks in our community who actually don't know, they have these abilities and don't know what to do with them, mm-hmm. you know, so that was just another way for us to use that platform to say that, look, it's okay that you're not evil.
Right.
It's like, this is not part of the devil's plan. You know, the Illuminati they have nothing to do with it. This is your, you know, this is what you do, and it's okay. And we also talk about, you know, spirituality and how it can help us heal from generational trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about politics as well, and how it's like personal politics as far as, like, you know, the how oppression and how white supremacy actually affects us spiritually to the point where this stuff is in our DNA. Dr. Joy DeGruy, or I think Dr. Joel DeGruy, she actually says that, you know, trauma is in our DNA, is woven into our DNA. That's why there's so much generational trauma that we can't shake, and that is passed down from one generation to the next. We talk about that, you know what I mean? And how spiritually, you know, we are affected to the point where we don't know ourselves anymore, and we can use our spirituality to find ourselves. You know, and that I really enjoy what I do, and I really enjoy that particular podcast, and the other two podcasts, like, I definitely, it's not the two of them, but black girl with glasses I want to start doing again. It's just that, what was I using? SoundCloud. SoundCloud is a mess.
Yeah.
Well, $15 a month, and I cannot afford that. So I'm going to switch everything over to MixCloud so I can do that shit for free, you know, and post it for free. And I definitely want to do everything I can to one day start paying people, you know, to come onto the show and to share their content. Because I feel like artists, you know, especially since we are reaching out to the deaf and hard of hearing and trying to get transcripts together, mm-hmm. we're supposed to be paid.
Right.
So once I get my money together, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, I want to I want to do everything I can to give back to artists and to make sure that they are getting what is owed to.
Word up.
That's awesome.
And we're just about, we're at 56 minutes. We're just about at the typical wine cellar hour.
Yes.
Ooh. Yep.
And you still have to add the trigger warning, so we are at
Jesus
hour.
Christ, yeah. So, I have to go back and add a trigger warning at the front end. All right, so what do you want to, still the same link name to the blog, Black Girl with Glasses, so folks can go there, check out the post, and share them. Don't just look at them yourself, share them, and go in your podcast application and download episodes of the Black Girl with Glasses. Particularly, there is one with J.L. Hissel, I think also J.L. Anastasia. Check out that episode. And this is WineCellarMedia.com. We will catch you around, Fothermuckers. Alright. Alright, Javi. You have a good one, Chief.
You too. Thank you so much. That was so much fun.
Alright. Hey, peace.
Thank you.
Bye.
Alright, see ya.
Telephone off. All right, and remember, that was not regular wine cellar, just free thought conversation. PayPal.me/Phoenix and William, Patreon.com/Wine Cellar Media Fund. Have a good one.